Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the highway to north, this is Safety Wars. We're on a little bit later today. We did not make the Safety FM feed. Sorry about that. Again, we had some community events tonight, believe it or not. It was my daughter's winter concert at school tonight, so we could not make it tonight. Yes, it's the daughter on the promos, my one and only Jessica. She thinks like me, it's scary. Watch out, boys, when she gets older. Anyway. So I have different monikers here in the lower, where are they? Yes, right there. I guess it's your, my right-hand side. I don't know if it's your left or my right, I don't know. I have that different title every night, right? So I have Safety Shock Jock tonight. I probably should have had that on last night. I was rewatching the program here on Rumble. We're going to be doing some marketing here and organizing here. Next few weeks. Right, better production, continuous improvement in your safety professional. And I tell you what, what we talked about was the United Healthcare murder, and then the vigilante not guilty in New York, and then I don't want to mention these people's names and anything else. Then we had, I went into the Harris psychopathic indicator checklist. I'll tell you what, very controversial. Try doing this. Now, so what I've done often is when we're doing an axe investigation or we're trying to help clients with their manage their people. Sometimes I'll whip this thing out just for my own use. And what do we have here? And because I'm not a clinician, I can't make a diagnosis, obviously. But it gets pretty interesting because this is what happens. The safety world, not because what we do over here in human organizational performance, but what other people do out there. How safety is managed. We had the safety dictator type of thing going on back in the day, safety cop. Well, shame on you. You're going to put on your hard hat or, get out. And then what we were forced to do a lot of times during COVID was with people not wanting to do the mask policies. And we talked about that last Monday, the first Monday in December of this year when the report came out. 525-page congressional report on the after-action report on COVID-19. When we covered all that stuff and everything else, so we go out there, we alienate people, we argue with people as an industry. We're not given any authority or any of those other big lists of things that I always talk about. Well, we don't do that. What happens? We get hated. Principle number five of human organizational performance is how you react to news and how you react to situations matters. We haven't really been historically good managers. We don't react to things nice. I remember back in the day, they would actually blame the safety person if someone wasn't wearing their safety glasses. Well, you didn't impress on him. You didn't remind him. Dude, I reminded him five times. I sent five emails, five photos to you. That's not my issue at that point. So I came up with the rule of three. If I have to remind you more than three times to do something, now I'm begging you. Guess what? Jimmy, don't beg. That's something for a manager to deal with, unless you're giving me the authority to hire, fire, discipline, reward, and change things. Right? So that's up for a manager to do. That's not up for the safety person to do. And if the manager is not willing to do that, some would argue the corporate culture isn't allowing it. Fair enough. But there's always a manager driving that safety culture. That's their issue. If I have to continuously go out there and remind somebody to wear their safety glasses, wear their hard hat, wear their PPE, follow procedures, and everything else that goes on there, guess what? Not my issue at that point. It really isn't. That's a corporate culture issue, and that has to be handled on the corporate cultural front. That has to be a manager, that has to be a supervisor, that has to be a competent person, that has to be a foreman. And you're not blaming this, because this is what they say. Well, and I don't say this in front of people. I bring the manager on the side. If X, Y, and Z person cannot obey these simple safety rules that they have agreed to abide by, and by the way, which you have agreed to enforce and help me enforce and help me manage, all right, if you're not doing that, and if they're not doing this, what else are they not doing? That's why a lot of these companies out there, general contractors, hosts, employers, you know, like refineries, pharmaceuticals, that sort of thing, energy companies, they feel that if you cannot if you cannot follow a simple safety rule, in their mind, simple, maybe it's not simple, maybe that's relevant. And remember, rules are towards the bottom of that hierarchy of controls under administrative controls. They feel that if you can't follow this, then guess what? Then you probably can't do your regular job correct either. Maybe totally incorrect, their assumption. But that is what their thinking is. It's a leading indicator of what's going on. And that's why it gets enforced the way it does get enforced. Now, what are we trying to do in the HOP world? We're trying to set up a system to reduce errors and to get the job done safely, effectively, with the least amount of aggravation possible. And of course, if we can do it, no accidents, no injuries, and no illnesses. But guess what? If we get those accidents, injuries, and illnesses, we're going to investigate them, and we're going to try to do better. And we're going to investigate them, not only do better, we're going to do better because we're going to put in controls and maybe see what happens, break out that little Jens Rasmussen modes of work thing and find out where exactly they are on that. So maybe we can come up with a better solution that works. There was an attorney today on LinkedIn that made the correct observation here. People write these procedures. Do they have any intention on following those procedures? Because if you have written procedures and you decide not to follow them, under OSHA, that could be potentially a willful citation. Not a good thing. And the other thing is, if you end involved in any litigation, they're going to break out that paperwork and say, well, your plan says X, Y, and Z. You got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And you didn't do it. Why not? And therefore, you're liable. All right? So this is why, if you're a safety professional, you have to have it in here. So I'm going to add one more thing to my list. So I'm always adding to this list here because of some litigation that I was involved with a client lately. Do I have the responsibility to do the work? Meaning, if I'm on a construction site, am I responsible for that building? We get that in writing now, all right, with that. So what are my now six things? Do I have the authority to hire? Do I have the authority to fire? Do I have the authority to discipline people? Do I have the do I have the authority to reward people? Do I have the authority to make changes? Do I have the responsibility of getting the work done on that? So now we have a sixth thing here. If you can't do any of that, the person who is going to be most likely to impact that work is going to be your foreman, your supervisor, your competent person, the owner of the company, and everything else. And, you know, we're going to talk about the drones in a minute here, because I tell you what, everyone's going nuts about the drones. And you know what? I probably should. Let me do this. We're going to go to some music here, and because I tell you what, there's some pictures I probably should upload to the stream here. So, and we have some music from Safety Warriors. So, and this is a Safety Warrior original, Safety Warriors exclusive, about the drones in New Jersey.
Above our heads, watching secrets and the streets we tread. Beeping lights and wings of chrome, guiding paths as we roam. In New Jersey skies, they hover high, whispers carry.
Yeah, and that is Safety Warrior with Eyes in the Sky. So I don't know how much national news this has gotten over the last couple of days, but we've been hearing all these reports about drone sightings all over the place. All right, and we have drones, looking over Picatinny Arsenal, which is a famous hazardous waste site cleanup in here in New Jersey. And it's also a very secure facility. So if you go up, you know what? Maybe I should get a map of New Jersey and share that. Hold on. So we have Dave 911 New Jersey who liked this song. Okay, thank you, Dave 911 New Jersey. So let's get a New Jersey map here. That's the other thing. Here, let's see. So here we have a New Jersey map. Let me share this over to you on that. Sorry I didn't set this up here, but I just, you know what, maybe I should get a new, rather than describing it, let me get a New Jersey map. So this is, hopefully we're allowed to share. This is off of Microsoft. So here we have, if you look at my right center of the screen here, let me zoom in. So you have the Point Pleasant area, Silverton area, Tom's River. If you go all the way down here, you have Smithville, the world-famous Smithville. And over here, just to give you a reference, we have Absecon, Atlantic City right there, where I went to school right here in Pomona University, Stockton University. Right here, this corner is the edge of the Pinelands Commission. The southwest, southeast corner of the Pinelands Commission there. And that, if you're from New Jersey, you know what that means. That basically delineates the legal boundary of the Pinelands, right? The international preserve or whatever the designation now is. So where right here in the center of the screen, if you look right here where my arrow is, that is where the drones are coming in. They're coming in through around Tom's or the Bayville area, that area, Long Beach Island. So this has given rise to the theory that these are being parked off the shore on some type of a large ship here. And if you look, and then they come across here, and then they come following my arrow, they come up Route 9 over by the Raritan Bay. If you're wondering where Woodbridge is, Woodbridge, New Jersey, where I grew up, this is right over here. This is also where we also flew on when we went over to the New City Airport, which is a big lights display. They have a flight simulator with Santa's reindeer. This is where Woodbridge, New Jersey is. We gave a big tour of northern New Jersey, which I am now famous for in the town of New City. Here, believe me, I've been immortalized, almost in song, all right? And if you look over here, there's Bayonne and New York City over here, Staten Island over here. All right, so I'm going to zoom out again. So drones are coming in through here through South Jersey, coming all the way up to North Jersey, and if you see this route 15, which I'm going to zoom in on, this Route 15 goes by all the way up here. All right, so we have Lake Mohawk. This over here that I have on the center section here, this is all, I believe, Picatinny Arsenal, all through here, Picatinny Arsenal, right here. But so it's a very large area. Now, there's a observation tower right about here in the center of the map. I'm told that is a communications system of some sort. I've always pointed out that that observation tower is for probably for fires, right? In case you have a fire, or we have an arsenal, probably don't want to have a fire in that area. And perfect place to look at New York City if it gets nuked, right? There. So you can tell this is actually, if you're going to drive this, this is like a 2.5-3 hour drive right up to here, right? From here to here, if you're going to go. Two and a half hours, maybe three with traffic there, because you get stuck in a Jersey jam. As the crow flies, it's probably around 50 miles or so. So you figure the drones have to go 50 miles up, 50 miles back. And my understanding is that the normal hobby drones, by law, that you're going to have, you have to, it's a line of sight control, meaning that you have to be able to see it and control it. These are not them. These are not line of sight. These are, and this is what the concern is. The concern is that these are being pre-programmed. And since they're being pre-programmed, who's pre-programming them, right? Who is pre-programming this stuff? Here's pre-programming it. Unless they're flying alongside of it. Now, according to some of the reports in the media today and some information released by the feds, that some of these things are, that there, a lot of these drone sightings, the 3,000 drone sightings, are manned. They are not drones. They're actually manned small aircraft of some sort. Okay, great. Why are they flying over? And let's get back to the New Jersey map here. Why? And are they, so let's zoom in again. Let's see where all the military facilities are on this map. So we, of course, have people coming through here, Lakewood. So we have military facilities all through here, right? Or former military facilities. Over here on the Raritan Bay, we have a Leonardo Pier, which is, I believe, right there where my arrow is in the center of the screen. That's where they refuel all the or is it over here? I don't think they even have it marked off here. Port Monmouth, right here. So, United States Military Reservation Earl. This is where all the ammunition gets loaded on, right here. And by the way, there is a rail line running from here directly to the other military reservation, which is, where is it? Down here. This is all Fort, this is Fort Dix in this area. So you have a rail line running right from there to there, and you have these drones from parts unknown flying right over it. Not really, that shows some concern here. I don't know, it shows concern to me. And then, not only that, you're flying over that military base. Now, this is all Raritan Center. This used to be a former military base up until World War II. Nothing really there to look at now, right? Then you have it flying all through here. And now you're flying over the Picatinny Arsenal right here, which is one of the most highly secure areas in the Northeast. And on the way there, you're also passing by Basking Ridge and where President Trump, President or President-elect, well, however you want to describe him, is right over here. I'm looking at the map, right in the center of the map. That's about where Trump Golf Course is. So you have all this stuff, all these drones. Now, we're going to talk about statement analysis before we go on. Say, well, Jimmy, what are you talking about, statement analysis? What does that mean? Does that mean like a financial statement? Or what exactly does that mean, statement analysis? There is a course out there that the if you are a investigator and if you're working for the federal government, especially the Federal Law Enforcement Academy, you have to take, there's a course out there on statement analysis. They may call it different things, but basically it comes down to this. You're talking to someone, you're interviewing someone. I teach this in the accident courses that Safety Wars teaches, accident investigation courses. How do you know whether someone is lying or not? How do you know if they're telling the truth or not? How do you know if they're giving a misleading statement? Very, very handy when you're dealing with people. And when you couple this, all right, I have a three-part thing. I have leadership, right? Let me write this down because I'm going to, leadership, rules for radicals, and this is the last one, statement. It's a three-part presentation I give, all right, where we talk about what leadership is, how you get manipulated, and how you can tell people are pulling your leg, or at least be better able to tell whether people are pulling your leg or not. So with statement analysis, you have to listen to what the person says. So here we have an article from Virjani Rawls from New Jersey Advanced Media for NJ.com. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's many large drones, and they're reported to be the size of a SUV. Right, 3,000 reported sightings so far, the FBI said. Now, this is what you have to realize. You're in New Jersey. they had reported sightings, right? Back in the mid-1990s, they had a coyote hunt in South Jersey. And they got one coyote. And what they figured out was, they said, we're getting all these coyote sightings. Why we got instead of a coyote hunt, did we only get one coyote? Because it was thousands of sightings of the same coyote, and they were looking, and they were short on cash. They needed to sell hunting licenses. That's the answer. New Jersey. Come on. So they had some hearings today, right? And what the hearings were saying, and you know, that goes on, you can go to NJ.com with this, was this. Many people are calling for clearer pictures and video to decipher the drones and even want to shoot them down, which is blatantly illegal. Let me put it, don't do it, it's a felony. All right. However, I think if we shoot one down, we'll find out who owns it real quick. Right. But first, you're going to go to jail. All right. Governor Phil Murphy came out explicitly against that on Tuesday. Right. It's illegal to shoot down a drone. And they had here elected officials have their explanations for this in Syria. U.S. Representative Jeff Van Drew, whom I met several times, floated an unconfirmed theory that these drones could be tied to a missing mothership from Iran. The Pentagon has since debunked this theory. We're going to go and we're going to research that on air right now. If the website is still up. An anonymous source from the New Jersey Chiefs, a coalition of police chiefs in the state, told the New York Post that they feel it's a possible copycat situation from a surveillance drill from Picatinny Arsenal base. Other countries are using it, even though we had a Chinese balloon incident in 2023. And the Pentagon has determined that drones are not U.S. military, but also not foreign objects. So what are they? So what they have said is, right, that this, and one official, I can't find the quote right here, but it's along the lines of this. There is no evidence that there is a threat. Now, let's take that statement apart. There is no evidence. Someone says to you, there's no evidence of X, Y, and Z. Why is there no evidence? Right? Your statement analysis would say, why is there no evidence? Is it that you didn't look into it? Is that you don't have evidence because you were unable to uncover it? Was it because there was you were out that day? Was it because you had evidence and you lost it? Now there is no evidence now because you lost the evidence? What exactly does that mean? Now you're going to say, well, Jimmy, that's crazy talk. That's conspiratorial. I can assure you, this is one of the strategies that investigators, including law enforcement officers, LEOs, use to trip people up. Well, what does that mean? Right, it's along the lines of the five whys from the Socratic method. Well, what does that mean? There's no evidence. And then later on, if there is evidence, well, we didn't have evidence there. Now there is evidence. So saying that there is no evidence doesn't mean it's not a statement that it whatever you're being the proponent of is not true. So saying that there is no evidence of something doesn't mean that that something is not true. This is the way investigators think. This is why it's important, and I mentioned it in a book 6 months ago or 7 months ago, I forget the author. It's important, right? I should write down who the authors are here. You have a right to remain silent, and what's the next thing? You have a right to an attorney. This is why you remain silent. If you're in the safety world, guess what? You got right, and you're a foreman or supervisor or above, guess what? During investigation, you have a Miranda rights, especially when you're dealing with private investigators and law enforcement. Because if you give a statement, that is considered a company policy. You're looked upon differently than a regular worker. So that's why you do that. So they're freaking out over these things. Well, I tell you what, something's going to eventually happen where there's going to be an accident, a collision, or something over an area. There's going to be an issue. How do we know this is not, okay, this is not a foreign agent
like a country, how do we know that they're not making drug drops somewhere? There's one report from around Newton, New Jersey. Dave Coppola, you know that, right? He's a friend of the program. Sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to. And his neighbor, well, they saw one. Up close and personal, got some pretty clear images of it. You know, I don't know what these things are. And, you know, that's all I'll say on this. Let's go to a commercial break. Let me see, because I tell you what, if there is a ship off the coast, they usually post that on the internet. Yeah, they do. You didn't know that? Hold on.
This is going to blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, you heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Posel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of Safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now, and stay safe, folks.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, I'm going to go for it here. And because I'm using this under fair use doctrine. No, as far as heart of commentary, I'm going to attribute this. This is from Marine Traffic. Get their website, marinetraffic.com. Which is they track ships with their transponder. So here we have, if you look, and let me get myself off here so we can see this a little bit better here. All right. And I don't endorse any of these advertisements coming across here, so just let you know. So here we have New Jersey. I'm sorry if you're on the podcast, but this is what I have, the coast of New Jersey. And all of these little marks here are ships and boats and everything. So here we have them coming across Tom's River Lake and over here, this whole area. So if we zoom in here, we're able to determine what these ships are. Now they're saying a huge mothership from a foreign country is off the coast. Well, if it has a transponder, we'll be able to see it right here. So here we have the John Nicholas, which is the U.S. registry. Here's another one, a fishing ship of some sort. Which one is it? So that's just something on there, and everyone advertises it. Okay. So here we have a DS Express, which is, looks like a fishing ship. Ruth Reinhauer. I'm actually familiar with this ship here. I've seen this ship around. Ruth Reinhauer. Right? The Tranquil Ace, which is a auto carrier. We have another one, which is another auto carrier. We have another fishing ship. Another fishing boat of some sort. It's a laboratory. It's a sea farm. I don't know what that is. All right, the Livingstone Empire Wind, which is a U.S., I don't know what, it's a multi-person purpose offshore vessel. East Coast, sailing under the flag of Netherlands. Did not recognize the flag there. So here we have ships coming in. We have the MSC Lisbon, SCI Duchess, St. Louis, Evergreen Mariner, on all these ships around here. We have a U.S. government vessel and a pilot vessel here over by Naval Weapons Station Earl, a Sea Streak, which I believe is some type of ferry. And another ship here, a vote. Another vote. And anyway, this is what you have. I'm not seeing, on the map at least, any big ships that would look suspicious to me. But who am I? I'm just a guy on the internet, right? So with these theories that they put out there, where, oh, well, there's a mother ship off the coast and everything. Well, guess what? Easy enough to check on this website, and there are other websites. So that's basically it here. We have another ship here, Norwegian. I don't think we're having problems in the Norwegians. So here we have the Jingwan Bonanza, which is a auto ship. A cargo vessel of some sort over here. You know, I don't know. So I'm going to say it's probably, no, being that there doesn't appear to be any ship off the coast that would likely be doing that. That doesn't look suspicious to me. I'm not a maritime guy here. I'm not a marine traffic guy. I don't think that this is coming from a ship. I think it's coming from land. Or, I don't know, are they launching them from a submarine off the coast? If they're launching from a submarine off the coast, we do know that there is a transatlantic cable running from up by Nova Scotia, up where the Titanic sunk, all the way down. That was revealed last year when that submarine imploded, the mini sub imploded. I think they know where everything is, if it's a submarine. I would like to think so. So I don't know what they are. My thinking is that this might be military of some sort, and they may be running some type of security surveillance, which is what my hope is, or they may be getting us used to seeing this stuff for some other reason. That's what I'm thinking here. I don't know. If you're on the video feed, right, on Rumble X, Skylander 52, or Safety Wars on X, some of those other things, you'll be able to see what we were talking about. I want to thank everybody here. We're coming up to program 400. It's hard to believe that we're to that point. So, All right, we're going to go to another commercial here, and we're going to come back with some OSHA news, and then we're going to wrap it up.
I'm sure you've heard the news. Safety training is evolving, and you should be too. Outdated safety training isn't just boring, it's dangerous. If your safety trainer is still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety from 25 years ago, it's time for a change. Imagine safety training that actually addresses the hazards unique to your workplace. No more generic, one-size-fits-all solutions. The Safety Wars team at SafetyWars.com is here to revolutionize how you approach safety with customized training that's relevant, engaging, and effective. Contact Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. Say goodbye to outdated safety training and hello to a safer, more productive environment. Visit safetywars.com now.
Okay, we're going to go over some of the OSHA news here, some of the stuff. Now, there's a big story that came out yesterday, and I want to go right to it here. With this. So here we have Department of Labor finalizes rule on proper fit requirements for personal protective equipment in construction. This is from yesterday. The U.S. Department of Labor announced that its Occupational Safety and Health Administration has finalized a revision to the personal protective equipment standard for construction. The final rule explicitly requires the equipment to properly fit. Yes, in construction, guess what? Up until next month, you're going to actually have to have equipment. If it's supplied by your employer, it needs to fit. Any construction worker the final rule explicitly requires the equipment to properly fit. Any construction worker who needs improving protection from hazardous conditions. I've talked to workers in construction, particularly women, who have spoken of personal protective equipment that didn't fit were simply unavailable at the job site in their size. Common problem. Except when I manage jobs. I'll put it out there. starting, especially in the hazmat field, where I came up through the hazardous waste site cleanup stuff, very common for them not to be have properly sized women female PPE. And so we had we ended up duct taping things or chemical taping things and getting it on there. But I, you know, back in the day, I tell you what, it used to take you 2 weeks to get small suits, for example. And I'm back ordering. You had to find them. And so I've always tried to do that. However, I'm going to tell you that was a rarity. The other one is safety glasses, right? Properly fitting safety glasses for smaller people and women. Often they're not available. They weren't available until recently. That's why I always get the gasketed safety glasses. Right, PPE must fit properly to work. And by the way, it goes the other end too. For example, they used to get extra large or large suits. Then, oh, here, Jim, put this on, and then you blow out your rear end on the suit in about 30 seconds. PPE must fit properly to work. I'm proud of the broad support from both employers and unions for OSHA's efforts to make clear that employers must provide the right PPE. That's from Doug Parker, Assistant Secretary for Occupational Safety and Health. The revision to the standard adds specific language requiring that employers provide PPE that fits properly to for a construction worker. So let's go. Do they have the final rule? Tell you what, tomorrow we're probably going to go into all this stuff, catch up on all these accents and stuff. So this is from the Department of Labor, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Let me share that. All right, and sure, it's up there. Okay, great. So Occupational Safety and Health Administration, 29 CFR, right, docket number, and they've been trying to do this since 2019. So this is 5 years in the making here. PPE in construction, final rule. OSHA is finalizing a revision to its personal protective equipment standard. This rule is effective 30 days after date of publication in the Federal Register. They're looking at somewhere in the middle of January with this. To read or download comments and other blah, 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 and dockets and pressing queries they have, this is all in here. And in the docket for the PPE in construction rulemaking found at regulations.gov, every submission was assigned a document identification number. Going on, you know, on there. So here we have the executive summary. OSHA is finalizing revisions to its PPE standard for construction, 29 CFR 1926.95C, to explicitly state that PPE must fit properly. This revision will align the language of the PPE standard for construction with the corresponding language in OSHA's PPE standards for general industry and shipyards, and affirm OSHA's interpretation of its PPE standard for construction as requiring properly fitting PPE. Properly fitting PPE is a critical element going on. PPE must fit properly to provide appropriate protection. Improperly fitting PPE may fail. Okay, great. And then they have the whole background here. Again, PPE is the last line of defense, right? You have to engineer things out. You have to eliminate things, substitute less dangerous stuff for more dangerous stuff, and an administrative control. And the PPE being the least reliable because it often doesn't fit. Is it, and all the other things that goes, does it fit? Is it appropriate? Got to make sure the person wears it, blah, 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 blah. And going on. And everything that we just said. And this gives the whole rulemaking history. It was discussed in July 28th, 2011. So now we're 14 months out, 14 years out, almost. 13 and a half years later, we got the thing, right? So, yeah, it took them 13 years to figure this one out. And I tell you what, let's do this. gives you all the summary of all the commentators. Whether the rule would effectuate the purpose of the Oshak better than consensus standards. Obviously, their conclusion was no, they need a rule, here, regulation change. And this is how this is all laid out. OSHA has examined the impacts of the rule as required by Executive Order, blah, 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 1288866, Regulatory Planning and Review, September 30th, 1993. Executive Order was implemented by President Bill Clinton. And then Modernizing Regulatory Review was another executive order issued by President Biden. Regulatory Flexibility Act issued September 19, 1980, President Carter. And then Unfettered Mandates Reform Act in 1995, that was President Bill Clinton. But basically, if it weren't for the 1994 victories of the Republican in both the House and Senate for the first time, having both of them in 40 years, that one would have never went out. The big issue for that act, as I remember, was that the government feds were making all these unfunded mandates and not funding them, basically. Going on. And obviously they said no. So here we have use of selective PPE in the construction industries for the PPE payment rule. 13 million plus of total PPE items used by construction employers. I think that's a little bit low, to be honest with you, unless you have the same person wearing the same pair of safety glasses for 10 years. And here's the other thing. I don't think... This is, again, good information if you're training, right? Estimated employees in construction industries by sex and PPE. Men, 85%. Women, 14%. Percentage of employees. Total employers, 6 times as many male employees as female employees. Percent using PPE, roughly 80%. Total PPE, employers using PPE, majority, right? 5.8 million. That means that there are construction workers not wearing PPE, of 1.4 million in there. So what's needed to comply with this rule? Okay, we could go through the whole thing. What's needed? A couple of things. You need to have an assessment done. So what I tell people is we just lost a whole bunch of streams here. What I tell people is this. If they are going to... So we're coming up to... I just had a whole bunch of stuff, alarms come across here, so I don't even know if I'm broadcasting here. Every January, there's not a lot going on in the construction industry. A lot of industries slow down after Christmas rush and things of that nature. Probably a very good time if you're a safety professional or some person in charge to go and review your safety plans and see if the PPE is still relevant and your plans are still relevant and recertify those plans. That's usually an email now or a letter saying, yeah, we reviewed all this stuff in January 2025. We're not making any changes and we've reviewed everything. That's usually a letter. That shows that that is a current plan. I'm doing this right now with a client in a third-party monitoring service. All right, that's what I'm doing right now. So you have to do an assessment. Depending on what standard you're working under, right, you're going to have to write a health and safety plan. So if you're doing 1910-120 hazardous waste site operations and emergency response, a.k.a. Haz Whopper, that is not the new sandwich at Burger King. It's the Haz Whopper standard. And essentially, yeah, that's an old joke, a dad joke, right? But basically, you need a safety plan. Now we also have to have a job hazard analysis or job safety analysis or a HAZ or something like that thrown in there. Now that's part of a lot of corporate cultures, and that's in compliance with a whole bunch of regulations where you have to make frequent and thorough inspections of your work area, and you got to plan things out and blah, 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 and do training. So all that goes in there. You do that every January. So this should be a minimal, for a regular company, this should be a minimal amount of work to do to comply with this standard, in my opinion. They want to make it like, oh my God, we can't. Well, guess what? For most employers, this is a small thing. If you're a large employer, chances are you're already doing this stuff. And let's say you're going to be hiring someone. You know that they're larger or smaller. Now your procurement people have to go out there and get the appropriate PPE and the appropriate size. All in all, not a big deal. I really don't see this as a big deal. And because if you're already complying with the law, you're already buying PPE, now you're just doing a different size. Now, how else do you manage it is this. How I normally manage it is that the women's PPE goes into a separate storage area. This way there's, so if we have small, if we have something like that, and it's usually women, you know, not all the time. All of the smalls go in this area and we separate them. Because what happens? Oh, it's the old white suit. Oh, I see a white suit. I see orange gloves. I see green gloves. I'm going to grab them. That's the wrong size. Maybe you want to have them manage it. Say, well, you know what? We have this job budgeted for, you're going to go through 5 pairs of work gloves here. Okay, we're going to give you up in front. You're in charge of the women's PPE, and you give it to a woman in charge. That often happens because they tend to do, right? They're the ones impacted by it. They're the ones who track it. Maybe give it to them in advance. I don't really recommend that, but that's another way of doing this. Because the other thing is this. Some of the PPE, harnesses, lanyards, mainly harnesses, someone has to help the woman put it on sometimes when they're trying them on to get the right size. What, you think I'm going to do that? I'm a man. I'm a married man. I'm not going to be doing anything, you know, helping a woman try on any PPE. I'll be honest with you. I don't do those things with that. So, you know, maybe another woman would want to manage this sort of thing. That's the kind of thing. So we're going to go over some of the accident stuff and citations tomorrow. We're coming up to the end of the program, our 1 hour limit. How did you like that new music from Safety Warrior? You know, we're going to close out the program after before the national anthem with some stuff here. Also, some other music. Oh, here's one from that was inspired by yesterday's program on the Hairs Checklist. So here, hold on. I run, just to let everybody know, I run all the music from an iPad on my right-hand side. So, oh, hold on. So I will see everybody tomorrow, God willing. I know it's Friday, and we'll go on. This will be if I do tomorrow, it'll be 4 programs. So that we do. So we're going to end with the outro, and then I'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Empty eyes, cold soul, no regrets. Heart of stone, darker than silhouette. Charming mask, broken dreams pile up high. Torn emotions buried deep, never cry. Sense of guilt, you're beyond.